B-Pod Studios.
Toucher, Rich, Wallach, and you.
Dan, go ahead.
What could possibly go wrong?
Fred, you are infuriating.
It's Toucher and Rich.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
.985 Sports Hub. We're Toucher and Rich. And Rich, I saw you put a list up on Twitter yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Breaking down the single soundtrack.
There's two. I don't know why I had time on my hands, but I power ranked the songs on the single soundtrack, and then subsequently did the Judgment Night soundtrack immediately afterwards, and power ranked those tracks because that's what I've been doing. But just in case you really wanted to know, because who doesn't? Wood by Alice in Chains getting number one in my power ranking, with State of Love and Trust right behind it by Pearl Jam. I've always said that's the best Pearl Jam song. And somebody did ask, a couple people were like, hey, like I put like the top eight. So it's a Where's Birth Ritual by Soundgarden. Like, dude, I'm a massive Soundgarden fan. Oh, like his vocals are hysterical in that song.
Early Soundgarden, I've said, is absolutely hysterical. That Hunger Strike song, I always thought was hysterical.
See, I love that vocal line.
I'm going 100.
I mean, that song, it's like his nuts are in a vice the entire song. Like, yeah. He hits this high note and never goes back down. And I even had Soundgarden fans going, man, I love Soundgarden. And that's not even like the top 40 best Soundgarden songs. But that's arguably the best soundtrack ever put together, is the single soundtrack. I mean, even like bands like Screaming Trees, that many people hadn't heard of before then, they came out with that single, Nearly Lost You, which is an amazing song. You had Mother Love Bone, which of course turned into Pearl Jam. They had a great single on there as well. Paul Westerberg from The Replacements, the Smashing Pumpkins song on there is one of the best Smashing Pumpkins songs.
See,
dude,
I don't
great.
Like that. I don't care for that song.
See, I love that song. I love the Smashing Pumpkins. Yeah. But yeah, so that was good. And the Judgment Night soundtrack
does not hold up at all.
You see, I would disagree. I think that there's about five great songs in that album, and the rest of it's kind of okay. But the five great songs are great. Like, Just Another Victim with Helmet and House of Pain is just, I mean, it never gets old.
Yeah,
Faith No More.
House of Pain doesn't have to do anything. That whole song.
I even thought the House of Pain, like, you know, the transition from the Helmet part to the House of Pain part, the way it happened is it's perfect. It slows down the riff, and then it goes right into him rapping, and I thought that was good. The Faith No More Booyah Tribe is fantastic for the fact that I've never heard of the Booyah Tribe before or after that song, but they kill it on that song. And then there was a one with De La Soul and
Teenage Fan Club,
which was really good. That was another good one, too, where they sampled Tom Petty. So bust that one out. That's a classic.
Yeah, I tried to listen to the Judgment Night soundtrack, and I said, this all sounds like Limp Bizkit. This is what this has turned into.
No, you see, I don't think the Faith No More Booyah Tribe sounded like that at all.
But he's like, turn me loose. But Ritual is that.
Birth Ritual.
Ritual!
Like, he's arguably one of the greatest singers of all time, in my opinion. I think that Chris Cornell's got a perfect voice. It's perfect. But, I mean, sometimes just because you can hit high notes doesn't mean you should do it throughout an entire song.
Yes, and that was pretty much all of Soundgarden's early stuff.
Yeah.
Like, the Louder Than Love, he's just...
You know, and the era of the great soundtrack is kind of over with, isn't it? I mean, because now... with streaming services, you can kind of make your own, you know, like playlists and stuff like that. But I'm thinking of, you know, back then, like the Crow soundtrack was an unbelievable one as well. I mean, if you want to go back to the 80s, you know, you've got the Rocky IV soundtrack, which, of course, is one of the all-time great ones as well. But
if you want to get motivated.
Sure.
I mean, that's just if you want to, you know, there's no easy way out. Come on, guys.
Okay, no Dan just said I go Pretty in Pink. What was on the Pretty in Pink soundtrack except for, was it I Touch You Once? I Touch You Once.
Yeah, yeah, O&D, but it was some 80s stuff. The Psych Furs were on there. The Smiths were on there.
Yeah.
New Order. There was an Echo and the Bunnymen song. There was Wouldn't It Be Good, which was a cover done by... Well, it was originally done by Nick Kershaw, but the Danny Hutton Hitters did it on the soundtrack. So it just it had, you know, 10 or 12 songs on there that were used in the movie as well. So,
you know, the original ending of that is she gets with Ducky. Did you know that? They they shot two endings. And in the original, she gets with Ducky. But then it wouldn't have been the same. Oh, poor Ducky.
I never saw that movie. I never saw Pretty in
you
Pink.
You never saw Pretty in Pink?
No, because when it came out, it was like, I mean, I was like a kid, and I really didn't want to see it. When I grew up, it was kind of dated. You know what I mean? So I didn't see
okay,
it.
Yeah, so Unrequited Love is just dated. Okay.
I never saw Some Kind of Wonderful. Like,
that's
I never
my
saw
wife's favorite movie, really? And it sucks.
Didn't like Some Kind of Wonderful, huh?
No, it sucks.
Tour de Force by Mary Stuart Masters.
To be honest, I wasn't a huge John Hughes fan until Home Alone came around. Like, I thought that The Breakfast Club is way overrated. I thought it was whiny. The whole movie I'm watching, I just thought it was a whiny movie.
But when you're in high school, that's what you want. You know, like, to think that all your problems are these massive deals. I mean, that's kind of what you want.
I know.
Out of that.
Yeah.
And you didn't like Vacation?
Oh, no. Vacation was not a John Hughes movie. Now, Christmas Vacation was written by John Hughes, and I love Christmas Vacation.
I think John Hughes wrote Vacation.
He may have, but I thought Harold Ramis did that.
I think it was based on a story he did for National Lampoon.
Okay, well, I did like the movie Vacation, but the ones he directed, 16 Candles was pretty good. Like, that was all right.
You can never get away with it now.
Oh, no. There's some stuff in that that's just, yeah. No,
well, yeah. Anthony Michael Hall has sex with a girl in a car because she thinks it's her boyfriend. Very 80s. That you know, the Revenge of the Nerds, false sex. Because I see 16 Candles. Like, I see it more often than a lot of films. And, there's a lot of stuff that you couldn't do. Like, he pays for... Molly Ringwald's panties to hold them up. So, yes, it's... Yeah, there's a...
Like a bathroom full of Wallachs at the school dance. And they all come in with a dollar, and like all of a sudden they all look up, and it's like, oh!
Get in on the bidding early, it comes cheap, I'm telling you.
Mm-hmm. All right, so, John, yes. You see, while I was listening to the Judgment Night soundtrack and singles... I got to think that you were all about the New Jack City, correct? Like that was your soundtrack,
me,
right?
Me, myself, and my microphone, Run DMC and Living Color. I mean, you know, there are certain tracks on there I like. Yeah.
I would think Booty Call was more of his. Right up his alley.
I think I Want to Sex You Up was... That was the New Jack City soundtrack, right? That
yes,
was the big
that's
hit.
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
That's
that, right. That broke Color Me Bad. It was so bad they had two D's in their
then,
name.
Then there was the appearance on 90210 that just sent them into orbit.
Well, I mean that was a situation of breaking and entering.
John just said in my headphones, "What are you talking about?" Wallach's favorite soundtrack was The Graduate when it came out.
It was the soundtrack to Birth of a Nation.
but New Jack City, I'm looking at it. I mean, this was kind of pretty good. Like, it had an Ice-T song when Ice-T rapped, which was great. And by the way,
the lifestyle. That's not the life. That's he did the title.
New Jack Hustler. He did New Jack Hustler. That's right. Which, of course, you know, that was a big song. Dude, this is right in your wheelhouse. This is Guy, Johnny Gill, Keith Sweat. By the way, Fred, while you were gone, we did a game of I Rule. And John Wallach's category was, you know, smooth, sweaty R&B and hip-hop songs from the early 90s that John loves. And that's his wheelhouse.
Yeah.
We picked a category that we thought he could not fail in. There's something weird about John when the pressure's on. Because when it's off, he can nail every single one of these.
Right.
But when we went to the game, he had 5 seconds to answer. Like, we'd play a 5-second clip, and then he had 5 seconds to name who the artist was. And he went 0 for 5. And these are
How
songs
is that possible?
I should have gotten Keith Sweat. I'm still pissed about
dude,
that.
Dude, his head, his brain explodes when the pressure's on.
Yeah.
So I gave him a second chance to redeem himself, and I said, you pick the category. I picked the R&B one because I thought he would kill it. And he said, how about side characters on 90210? So we would play a clip of a side character. And even then, he only went 2 for 5.
Would
you get Mons?
I have people. No. We didn't get Mons. It was weird because I thought that would be easier for me, but a 5-second clip of a secondary or tertiary character was pretty hard. And I had people come up to me after that and tell me that particular round was very difficult.
Did you get the wheelchair professor?
I did not get Finley. No, I did not get Finley.
See, now you know these names.
No. Now, it's easy when you bring up the characters, but when you hear kind of a generic clip of them speaking without any context, it's much more difficult.
All right, well, listen.
Hey, I fully admit I choked like a dog on the first one.
I mean,
0 for 5. I was awful. Second one, I got 2 out of 5, and I should have known one of the third ones. I should have known Gil.
Any subject, and I rule, and I will love sweep. There's no question about it.
Oh, okay. Is that a challenge?
That is a challenge.
Okay.
Well, I think we let you pick your own because that's fair. That's the glory of it. It's like, you know, it's something that you think that you are an expert on. And when you end up getting 0 for 5 like Wallach did, you realize there might be something really off in John's head. Like, that's like...
I know.
Like,
all I know is under the pants, it was like the Sahara Desert all around New England as they heard that he didn't know that. The smooth R&B that can get the ladies so hot. All right. Coming up, we have the...
Here you go. Who's that, John?
That's Johnny Gill.
Yeah, because the pressure's not on, so of course he knows
Johnny.
Rub you
the right way. Yeah.
All right, we have the gentleman who is the man who is basically let the NBA know that they can use Disney World, and now he is kind of has no shame in asking for jobs. We will talk to him in just a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking 5 of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on 5 we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top 5? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Toucher, Rich, Wallach, and you.
Dan, go ahead.
What could possibly go wrong?
Fred, you are infuriating.
It's Toucher and Rich.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it.
On 98.5, the Sports Hub.
We're Toucher and Rich. And Rich, I saw you put a list up on Twitter yesterday, breaking down the single soundtrack.
There's two. I don't know why I had time on my hands, but I power ranked the songs on the single soundtrack, and then subsequently did the Judgment Night soundtrack immediately afterwards, and power ranked those tracks because that's what I've been doing. But just in case you really wanted to know, because who doesn't? Wood by Alice in Chains getting number one in my power ranking, with State of Love and Trust right behind it by Pearl Jam. I've always said that's the best Pearl Jam song, and somebody did ask, a couple people were like, hey, like I put like the top 8.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
More of Toucher and Rich.
Stuff is never what you think it is.
On Boston's Home for Sports.
Some people just love to speak in emoji there, Fred.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
When you wish upon a star, makes no difference who you are.
is in your dreams.
95 Sports Hub, we are Toucher and Rich.
Is there anything better than Gene Simmons singing When You Wish Upon a Star? I don't think there is.
Sure. That was just like, I'm going against Brand. I'm usually a wicked demon.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm doing this. All right. Well, then you hear about the NBA and they're going to be playing in Orlando at Disney World. And you go, well, how did they get this idea? And it comes down to one man. And that man's name is as follows, as Keith Smith. And he joins us on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. Mr. Smith, hello.
Hey, good morning, guys. How are you?
We're doing well. Now, has the league reached out to you at all about, doing some work for them?
I have not heard it from anyone on that capacity, no.
What kind of thanks is that? Like, you're basically the one who you can credit for having the whole idea of Disney and them all playing it down there. And they didn't even send you, like, an edible arrangement or anything like that?
When the article posted, we got a note that said, thank you for the thoughtful and thorough idea, and that's been the extent of it so far.
Okay, so we had you on, when this kind of all became official about 2 weeks ago. And since then, more details have come out. And you wrote a really interesting article on, I think it was the CelticsBlog.com. And it kind of broke down some of the specifics of how it's all going to happen and the ballet that these teams are going to have to do, kind of avoiding each other coming in and coming out. What was the thing that stood out the most once you saw the specifics as it pertains to how it's going to all function at Disney World?
Yeah, I think the thing is there's two things. It's just how long some of these teams might be here in Florida. Some of them are going to arrive in early July. And if you go all the way to the finals and the finals go 7 games, you're going to be here for about 3.5 months. And that's a long period to be anywhere that's not home. So that stood out to me. And then the other part that is starting to come into focus and is really surprising is just how few people each team will bring. NBA traveling parties are generally between 50 to 60 people on the small side, 80 people on the high side, and then everybody's up around the 80, 90 during the playoffs. And they're only talking about bringing 35 people per team. So that's going to be interesting how those teams cut down that traveling list.
What does that mean for a team like the Celtics? Like, what is being cut out that you think, that might hinder them or they might have to compensate for? What do you see being something that they could have used that's not going to be able to come with them?
Yeah, I would say it's probably, you're not going to have the full PR staff there. Not the end of the world, because they're not going to be the media like there usually is. But the coaching staff is likely going to have to be cut down. And when I say coaching staff, I'm including, the bench coaches, the behind the bench coaches, the video guy, the skill development people, all the people who are there, that you don't see day to day, but they're not all going to be able to go. And some of the people, like I'm hearing from some of the teams, not the Celtics specifically, but from some other teams, that the video staff will just do everything remotely. They're going to probably be in the facility in Boston, and that's where they'll work out of, and they'll just do it from there versus being right there, which slows things down a little bit. You don't have that in-person communication and the like. And then they're going to have to just, continue to pare it down from there. There may, only be one or two front office people who go and things like that versus, four or five, which is generally par for the course during the playoffs.
Okay, there was an awesomely ridiculous list that came out last week about teams who had concerns that because of all this, their home court advantage would be taken away. And this was ways that the players were throwing out there that would compensate for the loss of that. Certain things that you could give higher seeded teams that the other teams wouldn't get. There were ridiculous ones like being able to bring your parquet down there, which is so it's never going to happen. But the one thing that most people were saying was the most realistic was that you give the higher seeds their choice of a better hotel. Do you see that happening? And B, like, Keith, what you picking, man? If you're LeBron James, it's dealer's choice, man. You're familiar with the whole campus. Where are you going if you could sleep anywhere at Disney?
All right, well, answer the second one first. I would pick Animal Kingdom Lodge. It's the best resort on property. It's my favorite. You know, any day you can wake up, throw your balcony blinds open, and see giraffes and zebras and things like that. That's a pretty good start to a day. So, you know,
Holiday Inn in Kissimmee.
Exactly.
Thought about it. You know, I thought about it. It was tough. You know, Motel 6 on 192 just off property. You know, thought about that one too. But as far as the hotel draft, I can tell you from the Disney perspective, that is the most unrealistic one of all. They were never going to provide the NBA with 20 to 30 hotels and say, hey, have a draft. And, you know, bummer, I would have liked the content. It would have been a lot of fun, you know. But yeah, but that was never going to happen. It was always going to be, you know, somewhere between one to three resorts, and that's it. Because, you know, the last thing you need is these guys spread all over property. Plus, Disney is reopening to paying guests here in fairly short order.
So they're going to, okay, so they're kind of, take me through the restrictions that they have, because we were discussing this yesterday. First of all, we'll get to that in a second. Like, they can golf. They can eat outside, but they're not allowed to go to the parks, and they're not allowed to go to, like, downtown Disney. Like, how do you keep these people in somewhat of a bubble while you have the parks open and people still at the resorts?
Yeah, it's funny. So what someone from the league clarified is, because they're just being careful with their wording, is it's not that they're not going to be allowed. It's if they do those things, then they're going to have to spend 10 to 14 days in self-quarantine before they can go through any basketball activity. So that's a very nice way of saying you're not allowed. You're not going to do that. And so what they're going to do is, you know, but they are going to let them play golf, because that's seen as something you can keep, you know, with the social distancing and the like. And, you know, I don't think people like me are going to roll up and say, hey, guys, just playing through. Oh, hey, LeBron, how's it going? You know, can I get a quote or two? Like, that's not going to happen. And then, you know, so what they're going to do is they're going to limit them, you know, where they can go within what they're calling their, you know, campus or bubble or whatever they want to call it now. And the thing with the players is, the players I've talked to, especially in the last couple weeks or so, as this has become more real, their focus has kind of changed from, oh, you know, that's an interesting idea, to, all right, we're doing this. And a lot of these guys are, this is a business trip now. I'm going to there to try to win a championship. And there's seven or eight teams that believe, you know, if things break right, they have a legitimate shot at winning this thing. There's no Golden State Warriors inevitability hanging over this season of, well, you know, we got to, you know, maybe we get lucky and we could trip them up. The teams are really, you know, have a good, strong belief that they can do this. And some of those teams believe even stronger now that you've eliminated things like home court advantage and the like, is, you know, makes it an uphill battle. So I don't think it's going to be the problem that it might seem to keep the guys, you know, contained and, you know, focused on what they're there for.
Okay. So Keith, we were talking about this yesterday. If you've got these guys who are going to be there for 3.5 months, I mean, that's longer than the quarantine has been up to this point. I mean, we're barely hitting right now 3 months. So if you have a team that's going to be there, I mean, that's a gratuitous amount of time. And so Let's say you're one of these players and you've got, you know, you're with all your friends are in this bubble, like a ton of your friends, guys from all of, it's not like you're all over the country. Everyone's come to the same place. So guys you used to play with, ex-teammates, all of your friends are all hanging out right here. The temptation, especially for when one team gets bounced out, but maybe someone else isn't, for them to leave the quote unquote Disney campus and go to a club or something just to hang out is got to be insane. So I know that you're supposed to quarantine if you end up leaving. You're not allowed to leave if you're still playing, because you have to come back, and I think it's 10 days, and then you got to get 2 negative tests to go back. First of all, how realistic do you see that, like, you're getting at least one or two instances of a player getting their photograph taken outside of the Disney campus? And on top of that, like, where do you, can you pick out a specific club that you imagine, that you know, that, like, what's close to Kissimmee or that you could see these guys actually going to?
Yeah, that's part of the challenge too, is that last part. There's not a lot close right to the Disney property. They're heading to downtown Orlando for that. And if they want the good stuff that they're used to, they're heading to Tampa, you know, which is you know, a good deal further away. So that's part of the challenge, is it's not, you're not just going to slip in an Uber and be there in 5 minutes and be back in 5 minutes. You know, I really don't think you're going to see it. I think, you know, just hearing some of these players, even guys who are end of the bench guys who don't play very much and, you know, aren't going to be there, that their comment has continually been, I don't want to be the guy who messes it up for Giannis or for LeBron James or for Kawhi Leonard and Paul George, because I went out. It did something. But, you know, you're talking, you know, a few hundred, you know, people here and, you know, younger guys. And I think the likelihood is decent that somebody does something stupid, you know, so we'll see. You know, it's, it's funny. People have asked, you know, well, who's your pick? And, you know, I'm not going to go down that road. but I think, you know, I think that it could happen for sure. You know, I think we could see somebody slip up.
All right, so you wrote something really good for CelticsBlog.com, I believe is the – it's not .net, it's .com, right? I like their writing. But you kind of made it specific to the Celtics and their return and how you think not only this several months off, but also how this playoff structure is set up, how it would affect the Celtics. And where do you see them being a strength, and where do you see this being a little bit of an issue or a concern in your mind?
Yeah, I think for a handful of the players, this break, this pause was good. Jaylen Brown was dealing with hamstring and ankle injuries. Now he's had a chance to heal up from those. Hopefully Kemba Walker, that one could go either way. You know, hopefully he's, you know, doing better with the knee soreness. But as we saw with Bojan Bogdanović from the Utah Jazz, he, you know, was dealing with a wrist injury that he was playing through. And then when he tried to ramp it up after the break, it was just too painful and he couldn't do it. So you hope it doesn't go that way with Kemba. I know he'll be a guy they're going to have all eyes on as they get back to work here, and they'll really manage him if needed. And then a couple others, you know, Daniel Tice, you know, is banged up. A guy like Jason Tatum, you never want to see anything stop when you were as hot as he was. And, you know, and it's going to be funny, you know, the first time he comes out and he shoots, you know, 4 for 15, people are going to lose their minds. And, you know, oh, Jason Tatum stinks now. You know, he had this break and he's awful, when it was probably always coming. You know, you just don't shoot, you know, what felt like 100% from the floor for weeks on end like he was. And then for the Celtics specifically, no home court advantage for teams like the Bucks and the Raptors is huge. The Celtics now, you know, don't have to go and play in those places, and they can do that. But one word of caution that I'm hearing from some coaches is Celtics trend towards a lot of younger guys have a big role on the team, and younger players are ones who coaches believe tend to benefit from a home crowd, because that home crowd lifts them and lets them, you know, kind of play better there. And they're not going to have that at any point during this environment.
All right. Keith Smith, get the man a job. He is the man who brought the NBA to Disney. Thank you so much for the time, sir.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. Y'all stay safe, you and yours.
All right. You too.
Right. You do the same. We'll be right back.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Boston sports fans start their day with Toucher and Rich.
There's a disagreement here in studio.
How unusual.
I'll tell you what, it's what makes us different that makes us great.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
A5 Sports Hub. It is Toucher and Rich, 7:37, and so this has been an interesting story. So obviously, with everything going on, not only with the protests and the NFL, and, you know, different athletes speaking out against, you know, what's been happening regarding the murder of George Floyd, and you've got all these different sides that have spoken their mind. One of the most interesting ones to me is a gentleman by the name of Bubba Wallace, who is a black NASCAR driver, if you haven't been watching NASCAR. And first of all, Bubba Wallace had a little bit of a scary moment at the end of this last week's race. Did you guys see this? So he was being interviewed afterwards.
This was
crazy. So now, a lot of people who talk about NASCAR drivers and will dismiss them as being all they get do is get behind a car and they put their foot on the gas, and, you know, how can that be tough? I mean, just think of not only the mental exhaustion of just trying not to get killed for an entire race, but also the level of heat that is inside those cars and the suits. So this is right after the race. I'm surprised this doesn't happen more often. Listen to this. This is Bubba Wallace being interviewed, and mid-interview, it looks like he passes out. Like, he's sitting down, and you just see his eyes close, and he starts, like, moving forward, and some of his crewmates have to grab onto him. I'm surprised it doesn't happen more often. Listen to this.
Bubba, the start of this race today was very impactful for many reasons.
Get at it.
What did it mean to you to see everybody come together and recognize and take a moment of listening? You okay? He's not okay.
Oh, boy. Yep. I think we're going to allow Bubba to catch his breath here.
I am surprised that doesn't happen more often. Just the amount of heat that they've got, and when they first get out of the race, and they probably are just dying for some sort of water or something. But, I mean, I guess in a report they said that he had tried to stand up at one point and had to get back down. But that clip right there is the one that I saw, and you just see him mid-conversation, his eyes just kind of like roll the back of his head. And
Rich, I don't mean to interrupt. Was that him at the beginning of her speaking? Was that him trying to say something?
Yeah. Let me hear that again, because it almost sounds like he's kind of in mid-pass out right there. Let me see.
Bubba, the start of this race today was very impactful for many reasons.
Get at it.
What did it mean to you?
That's the sound of someone who they need to hold on to him. It wasn't like a stroke or anything like that. It looked like a heat exhaustion type deal.
But like you said, Rich, you never see that.
No, and I'm kind of shocked that you don't see that more in NASCAR. But he has been very outspoken with everything that's been going on. As a matter of fact, this week he's going to have a car that says Black Lives Matter on the side.
He's the 43, now, right? He's the 43 car.
I don't remember. I don't know.
It was a 43. Yeah, but the painting the car black and have Black Lives Matter on it's a big statement.
But
for that sport, yes.
But the thing that's going to really rock the boat, and this is something that I'm surprised it's taken this long, but Bubba Wallace now wants to ban one thing from coming to NASCAR races from now on. And listen to what he said.
My next step would be to get rid of all Confederate flags. There should be no individual that is uncomfortable showing up to our events to have a good time with their family that feels some type of way about something they have seen, an object they have seen flying. No one should feel uncomfortable when they come to a NASCAR race. So it starts with Confederate flags. Get them out of here. They have no place for them.
Okay. I've been to... What's that?
That means personal liberty.
I was just going to say. There's going to be pushback on this one.
It ain't racist. You're just taking a small part of it.
I have been to probably 20 different NASCAR races. Now, in fairness, I haven't been in since 2006. I think it's the last one. It's been 14 years. Those things are like seeing Tom Brady jerseys at a Patriots game. I mean, they're everywhere. At least they were back in the day. They were everywhere. As a matter of fact, if you take a look at a picture of a place like Talladega or one of the super speedways where you can camp out in the field over the weekend, people will set up their RVs and they'll put giant flags up and they'll be like massive Confederate flags. Now, things may have changed, and obviously they probably have. As a matter of fact, I've talked about how before, my family first moved from up north down south when I was a kid, like in the 80s, the Confederate flag, for a lot of people, it wasn't about slavery. It was just like, oh, it's the South. And a lot of that had to do with the way it was portrayed on things like TV, like the General Lee. Like, you know, you watch the Dukes of Hazzard. That wasn't about two guys on slavery patrol. That was just guys who are good. Oh, they're Southerners. Yeah, that's right. They're Southerners. You know, this means Dixie, the South. And then it wasn't until, like, I think it was right around 90 or 92 where there was a guy who was running for governor. And there was another guy who was running, said he was going to change the Georgia flag because the Georgia flag has the Confederate battle emblem on it. And he said he was going to change it. And the guy who ended up winning, the entire reason that he won was because he pledged not to change the state flag. And so, and what was great too is once he got elected, he ended up changing it, and there were signs all over the city that said "Sonny Lie." It was Sonny Perdue. How like Southern is that? Lie to us.
He's from the Purdue Corporation. I mean,
right. So these are things that have just been ingrained, and then at that point, it was actually kind of an eye-opening moment for a lot of people, because a lot of people had dismissed it as, oh, that's just been the Georgia flag for a while. And then you learned why that was put on. It wasn't always there. They put it on right in the middle of segregation as kind of an FU to that movement. They brought it back and put it on the flag. So, like, you would think at this point people kind of would understand that this isn't about just being Southern anymore. I mean, this is a really pissing off a lot of people. And for Bubba Wallace to get out there, and Dan just whispered in my headset, he's right. Like, NASCAR is about to start letting fans back into the stands in a lot of these big races. I think that Talladega is going to be one of them. And Talladega, that's right in the anus of Alabama. Like, I mean, it's right there. So, I mean, that's going to be an interesting thing to watch, to keep an eye on, because Bubba Wallace is right. I mean, if you bring a flag, a Confederate flag, you're pissing off a lot of people. And I wonder if what the response is going to be. Are people going to say, you know what, I'm realizing that I'm pissing people off now? Or is it going to be, well, that just means I'm going to bring a bigger flag now?
Oh, no, it means that they're going to be a bigger flag. I mean, when I was in Tennessee, I mean, people still rock Confederate flags on the regular.
Oh, yeah.
Or shirts with Confederate flags on them. I mean, and that was a week ago.
Yep.
So, yeah, they're not going anywhere. In fact, people will become more defiant the more that you tell them that they can't do it. Is that they're going to come more defiant. And the idea that anyone, because if you ask them, they're like, it's about freedom, you know, you don't understand.
It's about my forefathers, you know, they fought, you know. And then he's like, well, they fought for slavery? Is that, I mean,
well,
you know,
that's not the whole story. I mean, they fought for, you know, their independence from the bureaucrats up north. So, yes, there's many ways that it can be spun. But, it's of course, it's about racism. And, you know, they feel, and then it's not just Confederate flag shirts. It like works its way into other art pieces. So you have, you know, like a guy fishing and it just has Confederate flag on it. Like, you know, like,
it's just part of it. It's like they integrate it, you know, all over. I mean, I told you about when I was in high school, and this was probably even after the Sonny Perdue thing. Yeah, it was. And it was when Malcolm X was a big movie. And, you know, everyone – remember the X shirts that everyone had?
Yes,
the X hats. So I remember – and my school was – I mean, it was – you had one-third of the school was black. One-third was kind of like this weird preppy type deal. And another third was like deep, like rednecks, like rednecks. And the three of them, it was, you know, you could see them all running, you know, and no one mixed with each other. They were all together in their own groups. And it was very strange in the South. But the one thing that when everyone was wearing the X shirts, the redneck crew showed up. I remember there's one guy who had a shirt with a Confederate flag on it. Said, "You wear your X, I'll wear mine."
Oh, God.
And I'm like, all right, man, what are you doing here? I mean, and even me, I'm sitting there, and this is like in the early 90s when, as I said, like, you know, at first, the Confederate flag for a lot of people, just it was kind of this innocent thing that was, you know, even perpetuated by the media. It just means it's from the South. Like, even at that point, I'm like, dude, what are you doing? Like, you're looking to get your ass kicked doing that here. But then again, he had a third of the school behind his back. If there was ever a fight, and there were fights all the time on our campus, all the time, and they were like deep. I one time saw almost a 40-person fight. And it all started from a weird place. There was this goth kid, and this one guy went up, and this goth kid was yelling at this other it was a black guy and a goth kid that got in a fight. And all of a sudden, it was like 40 people jumping on top of each other, to the point where teachers were going in, and they just stopped trying to stop it because they were getting hit. I think they had a record number of suspensions after that. But, I mean, that's just get ready, because you tell those people down South that they can't bring a Confederate flag to a NASCAR race, stuff's going to get weird. So just get ready to watch it and see how it all works out. I mean, but good on Bubba Wallace for saying that, because, I mean, that takes – you want to talk about guts. That takes guts to be
especially
a NASCAR
a guy named
driver
Bubba.
And say that.
Especially if you're named Bubba.
Yeah, so I mean, good for him, man.
Yeah, he's not going to be very happy with the school corporation anymore. But nonetheless, yes, I mean, yeah, and they'll still bring more. I mean, can you ban someone for having a Confederate flag?
Yeah, sure. You cannot let it in. I mean, sporting events all the time don't let you bring in certain things, like, you know, banners. And yeah, I mean, God knows that you can't go to a Red Sox game and bring a lot of signs. They've confiscated those things before.
Right.
Sure, I guess you could, but it's not going to stop people from having them out front where they're tailgating and stuff like that. But, you know, I don't know if – I mean, that would be also interesting, too, the reaction to NASCAR – saying, you know what, you're right, Bubba, let's get rid of that, and, you know, then they'll just wear their shirts, and I wonder if they can ban those, and how that all goes, so.
Yeah, well, don't tread on me, is what I've always said. All right, so we'll return in just a moment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Toucher and Rich.
Good morning, guys. How's everyone today?
Oh, it's just a day after day of delight.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
At the Sports Hub, we're Toucher and Rich. We use a calendar, an online calendar, to plan the show. And on my calendar, it has a device that I can't figure out what it is. And it says, stop using toilet paper. And it's a metal, like, cylinder. And I am afraid to click on it because I don't want to be overwhelmed with spam. But it is fascinating into what it could be. Because it doesn't look like something that is a bidet. It's just a woman holding a metal cylinder. And she is, and apparently it makes toilet paper obsolete. So, I mean, who knows what's going on?
It's the two shells from Demolition Man. We should know
okay,
how
here
to
it
use
is.
Them.
This DIY bathroom upgrade is saving thousands of toilet paper. All right, I'm clicking on it. All right. Mom discovers new simple trick to stop wasting money on toilet paper. Angela Williams was in for a refreshing surprise on her recent vacation. Her family went on a two-way stay to Jamaica and learned about something most Americans never think of. When arriving in Japan, she immediately had to use the restroom when the plane landed. But when she went into the stall, there was an interesting device detached. It apparently used water to clean your tush instead of expensive and irritating toilet paper. So she sat down and decided to give it a try. So it is a bidet.
It's a bidet.
Yeah. Then she rushed out of the restroom to tell her family. And when they arrived at the hotel, she found out the toilet there even had a bidet. I couldn't believe it. Every toilet I saw there had a bidet, Angela says. Such a sexy, sexy conversation. My husband even gave it a try and loved it. It was something she couldn't believe she had never tried in her entire life. So she decided to do some digging online. Posted into the bathroom. I was shocked about what I read. Apparently 80% of the world uses these bidets instead of toilet paper like we do in America.
What is this?
And thinking back, I've probably spent thousands of dollars on toilet paper in my life. With this, I would cut that cost down dramatically. Angelo took a glance online and tried to find one for her house, but she was shocked by the results.
I got one to sell her. I bought one at the beginning of this whole thing, and I never installed it. I still have it. Oh, by the way, it's the three seashells. Come on, Rich, not the two ones. To be quite honest, I've never quite figured out what it's for. I've had people reach out and tell me what the three shells, how you clean yourself with the three seashells. I'm not quite sure, but yeah, I have one in a box because I just got lazy, and by the time I probably got the motivation to install the bidet, toilet paper was easy to find again. So,
when she tried to look for one for her house, she was shocked by the prices.
somewhere as high as $1,500.
Why the hell is she looking? Is she the dumbest human on the planet?
No.
That she, first of all, had never heard of like a bidet, like that they didn't exist. And then that she's going to websites where a bidet costs $1,500. Mine was, I'm not kidding, I think it was like $75.
Okay, I'll tell you this. She knew there had to be a more affordable way to upgrade her bathroom, but little did she know help was waiting for her back home. A neighbor came over to have a cup of coffee and learn about a trip to Japan.
Angela, and the topic of taking a dump came up.
Yep. Angela embarrassingly told her neighbor all about the bidets and how she couldn't find one she could afford. The neighbor looked shocked, and Angela began to backtrack and excuse herself for talking about it. The neighbor bolted for the door. I was so embarrassed, I thought that she was never coming back and going to tell the whole neighborhood about it. But then I heard a knock on the door 2 minutes later. The neighbor was back and seemed excited. She was holding a blue box and yelled, "I have an extra one for you."
What kind of weird-ass neighborhood is this? She's just got an extra bidet sitting around?
It's my neighborhood. Angela was confused for a minute. Her neighbor had brought her a bidet that could attach to any toilet. "Let's install this right now. It's so easy," she said. "Allow me to put my hands in your toilet." We installed it in my bathroom in less than 10 minutes.
It took turns together.
Yeah, it was time to give it a try. Angela said, "Wow, this is just as good as any bidet I used in Japan. I don't know much about how it works, but I knew it was amazing. I saw the box it came in and it said rear clear on it. I couldn't believe it." She said, "I bought three more for every toilet in my house as soon as my neighbor left. They arrived a few days later, and I was able to install them all by myself quickly." And they, oh my goodness. Then it goes on and on.
Now, how is this a tube?
And then it goes, I guess she just installed into it. But she goes by weeks. My review of Clear Rear, and it goes up to, it goes week one, week two, week four.
My life with a bidet. Just like she's got her bidet diary.
Yeah. And so I wanted to see how easy it was to install. So I went to the bathroom in my bedroom and set up a timer on my phone to see how long it took me to install it. It was 13 minutes and 22 seconds. And most of that was me reading the instructions. I was also really impressed with the instructions. Plus, it came with everything I needed to install it. Still amazed, this is week two, about how well the clear rear works. I feel like I definitely made the right choice. I love the self-cleaning nozzle. I just turn it on for a few seconds and it cleans itself. No scrubbing all the time. I don't want to use the wet restroom at work or anywhere except my bathroom now. I find myself rushing home to use it. Guys, can we hold the meeting? I got to poo. Best choice I've ever made for the house. This is week four. Can't believe I upgraded my toilet for so little money.
Yeah, she's so obsessed with it by week four.
Yes.
You would think that the novelty would... That's when you start to worry.
Yeah.
Like, that's when, I don't know, maybe you take her to a psychiatrist.
Yeah. She says, "This test has been a complete success, and I am really shocked more Americans don't have this at home. I took a trip to the grocery store. I noticed I didn't need to buy any toilet paper. I'm already saving money." So there you go. That is the story of the clear rear, if you would. That is, so you go out and get one of those and tell them Fred Todger sent you. All right. No commercials here. Just the headlines will play our role.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.